Hey guys, I am so happy that you decided to hit play on this episode, and I hope that you're like me and are super excited for this Elseworlds crossover that is coming up on the CW in just a couple of days. And so we wanted to brush you up by talking all about Batwoman's first post-crisis arc in the comics. That is Detective Comics number 854 to 863. And there's a portion of this arc that I really wanted to touch on. And I really wanted to touch on this arc because of how high the suicide rates are in the LGBT community. And there's a portion of this arc where Batwoman is let go from the army because she is a lesbian. And we originally had a segment planned on this for this episode with LGBT exclusive podcasters, and we just couldn't get the schedule to actually work and flesh out. So what we're actually going to do is, it is referenced a couple times throughout the course of this episode. I felt as a heterosexual male, I just did not have the gravitas to really bring the subject the justice and depth that it deserves. And so with that, we are going to be doing a full-length episode in 2019 at some point that is going to be kind of dealing with the art of LGBT and expressing, being comfortable in who you are. And so with that, we're so happy that you guys decided to hit play on this, and now our feature presentation.
This is a Bats Entertainment podcast.
Life without hope. Now that's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. It means hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I am your host, Captain Nostalgia, and I am joined this week by Mr. Mike C Squared, one of the hosts of the podcast One Giant Leap for Geeks. What's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. Thanks for having me on. Happy to be here.
No problem, man. It's super hard. I don't know why I make it so hard, but it's super hard to find new podcasts to people to bring on that do discuss like comics on their podcast. I don't know why.
Really?
Like I can literally, I know you guys and Zero Supervision are just, yep, about like the only two that I know that will regularly talk about comics. We talk about comics here, you know, here and there, but I mean, it's not something that it's like we jump so much pop culture. Mm-hmm. But when you're trying to find a guest that wants to come on and talk about the certain comics you want to for the certain reason you want to, it's very difficult.
That's actually really fascinating to me, because I'm like, you know, so many people are into comic book related, you know, stuff, but not so much comics themselves.
Yeah, which I think is weird, because like I always find it fascinating. Like we were talking before we started about Venom and, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody, like two things of which like I kind of like was a casual fan, but kind of like in my anticipation for the cinematic stuff, I really wanted to familiarize myself with it. And when Venom first came out, they were talking about it going to be this, it was going to be based on the 91 arc Lethal Protector. So I went out and bought the trade for it and loved it. And then for Queen, like I just familiarized myself with a lot more of their music beyond just the mainstream stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, it's really weird when you're like, you're talking to someone and be like, oh, you're a fan of Arrow. Have you ever read any of the comics, or are you a fan of, you know, you like the Batman movies. Have you ever read any of the Batman comics? And it's really weird to kind of like hear like people's like interpretations, like you're saying, like, oh no, I haven't. I love the movies, but you know, the comics just aren't my thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's I don't know, because I mean, people still read, I think. I mean, at least I'm pretty sure. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, comics has always been a niche thing anyway, so excuse me. There was never going to be a, you know, just a big clamoring of people because it's like, oh, I don't have to go to a comic shop or, you know, feel like a nerd or something. You know, I can read them online. Like, you know, just reading comics in general is just always going to kind of be a niche thing.
Which kind of makes me sad because I want to have these conversations. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I love the fact that I can now have conversations openly with people that aren't necessarily nerds, but have like seen like Infinity War or like these Marvel movies, or even to a lesser extent some of these DC movies. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk to them about things like Watchmen and The Dark Knight Returns, and you know, Frank Miller's run on Daredevil and Spawn, and like just these comics that like are so iconic to comic book culture, but not necessarily to like the mainstream culture.
Yeah. No, they. You know, it's like, oh yeah, Daredevil. I saw that Ben Affleck movie. Yeah, but I mean, but to a degree, I think though, there are more people who do know the whole like inside baseball of like these characters and like their comic arcs and stuff like that, because you know the internet has helped with a lot of that stuff. I mean, even you know, just like if you you watch a lot of YouTube videos and, you know, there's a guy, I think he's called like Comics Explained. And, yep. And he has really good, like condensed, you know, versions of like the stories and stuff like that, or even like longer form versions. And, you know, I don't know. Like, I think people are always going to be to some degree or another into comic book culture, but not necessarily comic books.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. And so we've talked a lot about like how we view comic books, but I'm kind of curious, tell us a little bit about what One Giant Leap for Geeks is all about.
Well, we're a pop culture, news and mainly movie focused podcast. We kind of keep it a little broad. We will talk about anything from a new trailer that came out to a rolling cheese log tournament, you know, in Germany. so it can be kind of random at times. We try to always keep it funny. We don't get too serious, you know, unless it just kind of happens to go there. But no, we try to have fun, and you know, it is definitely not safe for work, though. I'll tell you that. Like, I'm like, if you got kids and you guys are doing a road trip or something, it's like, oh yeah, we should listen to this podcast. Like, don't do it. Unless you're just a horrible, horrible parent, then sure, go ahead.
So I guess like one of the, like, I've listened to you guys a couple times, and like you're definitely, as are random. So like, what is it like when you guys are preparing for a show to kind of go from something like, say, like a new release trailer to like, at the time we're recording this, like Toy Story 4 came out today, and Detective Pikachu, but then kind of doing something like a cheese log eating contest in another country, like where do you guys kind of like organize these shows and the topics you guys want to talk about each episode?
I'm not gonna lie, a lot of it is just kind of happenstance, and then other times it's just like free flowing thought that just kind of goes from thing to thing. I mean, because I think we all have like, you know, attention deficit disorders to some degree or another. So it I don't know. It's odd because I feel like to a degree our show is still kind of young. Like, we're still in our first year and we are still trying to figure out what the show is and really find our own voice. And so as the show matures and it's starting to change some, and and I want it to change even more going down the road, but I don't know. It's there's moments where I feel like I could talk about other topics, because I, you know, and I even say it in like the whole banner at the front of our episodes about that we talk about anime, but my co-hosts don't like anime the way I like anime. So a lot of times, you know, I'm like, I want to go into stuff like that, but you know, kind of feel like, oh, well, you know, I don't want to bore these guys and stuff like that. But I want to be able to just share my enthusiasm about pop culture and geeky stuff. And if people care enough to listen, then, you know, that's a plus as well.
No, that's, and I think that that's like, I was telling you guys, that's how we started. We were just two guys that got together and we would talk of the news, like whatever interested us. If anyone decided that they were going to listen, it was great. If you decided you were going to support us, that's great. And we came to our first September, where we both had kind of struggled with the depression really bad, and we wanted to start talking about these I guess larger issues that we feel like needed a spotlight, like suicide and depression. And that was kind of the change for us. And as we've developed, it's been, you know, less about nerd news and more less about condensed into like, oh, well, we're going to spend this episode talking about this movie or this specific comic arc. Or we, you know, last month, like we did an episode where it was a Stan Lee memorial. You just have these like one topics that you're using to draw people in, and it's going to appeal to different people. But at the same time, I think that, you know, that's the thing about being a podcast, is that you have to find really what's going to work for you. Because if you started a podcast out of passion, how do you keep that passion from continuing and never really becoming burnt out? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you guys, when do you guys release episodes?
Every Wednesday. Usually.
All right. Well, so you guys can click the link in the descriptions below if you guys want to check out One Giant Leap for Geeks. But I'm gonna ask you this. What is the weirdest story that you guys have chosen to cover for your show?
Oh God. Can I swear on here?
Yeah. Yeah, go for it, dude.
Okay. So So there was a story about this girl who, she's been in the news once before for, I think, like trying to have sex with her dog. But it was this chick who was drinking her fucking dog's like piss.
What?
For like health reasons. She, and it's funny that I'm talking about this on this podcast as well, because she said that it helps with, like, you know, anxiety and depression, and it'll clear up acne and you'll just feel better overall. And I'm like, where the fuck are you getting this from? Like, who, like, what website or, you know, subreddit are you on where you saw this and was like, you know what, I'm going to do it. And she put like a video on YouTube. Like, if you just Google girl drinking dog piss, you will see, like, she films the dog peeing in the cup, and it's in a little, you know, Dixie cup, and she drinks it and like licks the rim, and it's rough.
Oh, I immediately regret asking that question.
Yeah, you should.
It's like, how do you transition out of that?
Right.
What's the most interesting, I guess, than you guys have covered so far?
We talked about how the EU has been trying to make some laws concerning using copyrighted material from other stories on like social media, and how they're trying to crack down on that kind of stuff to the point where they want to fine companies or make it easier to sue companies for, say, for example, if you run a blog or a news website and I take a link to one of your stories and post it on Facebook, like they're trying to make it possible to where you could fine and or sue Facebook for using, you know, a link to your, you know, intellectual property or whatever. And it's just crazy, because a lot of laws that get passed for like internet stuff, especially like in the UK, end up making their way over here. And so, you know, I'm kind of concerned that something like that may be an issue for us coming down the road, because, you know, a lot of these companies are international companies anyway. So, you know, something that affects them over there could end up having a blanketed effect on what we can post to websites.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, I feel like it's becoming harder and harder for creators to get a voice. You know, you look at the YouTube way that YouTube has done their algorithm over the last year. You look at the way that Facebook has changed their algorithm over the last year, and you know, just these things that are, it's like, I both get it as a company standpoint, but it sucks from, you know, an independent creator standpoint, because I want people to hear the message that I have, and you know, putting a lot of hard work into this, and I want to share this, but it's one of those things that's becoming harder and harder to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was actually just listening to your episode talking about, you know, starting a podcast and stuff like that, and about, I think you guys talked about on there how when you start, you know, a podcast specifically, that is kind of like stepping into an ocean, because there's just like a giant sea of other podcasts out there, and you have to, you know, find your foothold and figure out how to stay afloat and make yourself distinct enough from, you know, the other 10,000, you know, geek and pop culture podcasts out there.
Yeah, and I think that too, it's one of those things too, that it's almost kind of, we're almost kind of getting into this like cultural shift where, you know, back 20, 30 years ago, if you were, say, a band and you wanted to get signed, the way that you got signed, it wasn't through social media, but it was word of mouth, it was traveling, and it was playing your shows. And I think that that's kind of the area that we're getting into with a lot of the, you know, even podcasts, these comic book conventions, they're starting to become bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just did one this past weekend, and you look at it, and it's very like reassuring that like people believe in what you're doing, and they want to hear what you have to say. And so I think that, you know, even with this social media shift, I think it's going to be kind of going back to, you know, the genesis of how to get your voice out there. It's interacting with your audience and getting to know them one by one.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. It can never be overstated the importance of interacting with and knowing your audience, for sure.
Yeah. All right. So you guys click the links in the description below. But Batgirl is about to make her debut on the CW, and she is played by Ruby Rose. And so before we kind of get into talking about the comic stuff, what are your thoughts on getting Ruby Rose to play Batwoman and bringing her into live action?
I'm with it, because I had to do, it's funny, actually, quite a bit of research in preparation for this about Batwoman, because her character in particular, I don't know much about. I haven't really read much of anything from her New 52 stuff. And then, you know, when they brought her back, you know, before that, she was gone for a good like 20 some odd years. But I'm kind of indifferent. I mean, I like Ruby Rose enough. I mean, I don't think that she's done nothing great per se, but she's not been in anything terrible either. So, but I'm just happy that the character is, you know, going to be on a screen of some size, regardless if it's big screen or small screen. But I mean, Ruby Rose specifically playing her, I'm indifferent. Sure.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. I haven't seen too much of Ruby Rose actually as an actress. The only one that really kind of sticks with me is John Wick 2.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I thought that, you know, for as busy as that film was and as unneeded as it was, you know, I think that she left an impression on me. So like when her casting news came out, like that was immediately where my mind went to. And I think that if you can make an impact on a viewer by not saying a word, I think you're going to do a great job at bringing this character to life.
Oh yeah. I mean, my only worry is the same issue with all the CW shows is, you know, everybody's kind of overacting and it's, you know, kind of hammy sometimes. And, you know, so I'm just worried that they're going to be like how Arrow is and try to get like super dark, serious, like, you know, do you bleed and all that. Like, I don't want, you know, which I'm worried that that's what's going to happen, especially after revisiting, you know, this arc. I was like, oh man, like, yeah, this is going to end up being like some real edgelord shit, like hardcore.
I mean, I think that Batwoman is kind of one of those characters that you could really go either way with tone, because she's not this dark character as Batman, but yet she's like not this like super preppy character like who is a good character to compare, like Supergirl maybe.
Sure,
or even Wonder Woman, I think is another great example. You know, she's as they kind of explore in this throughout these two arcs. That if you guys like what we have to say, you guys can actually click the links in the descriptions below and read them on DC Universe. But I think that the way that, you know, kind of her backstory is handled and kind of how she goes from, you know, being this twin to an only child to becoming Batwoman and searching, like, I think it's a fascinating arc, and it's not your typical comic book origin.
No.
Like, yes, no. Yes, that there's some tragedy that happens there, but there's a lot of genuine joy that happens there. And I think that there's a lot of humor that happens back and forth between her and her dad that I really want to see explored on the big on the small screen.
Sure, sure. No, I was gonna say, because it's really fascinating the way that her origin plays out, because she has a lot of elements of obviously Batman, like, you know, her dad is basically her Alfred, you know, her, not both of her parents, but one of her parents gets killed as a child and this and the other. But I like the things that they changed and where along the, you know, origin journey it got changed, because as opposed to Bruce, you know, just her mother was killed and her twin sister who, you know, then spoiler alert, you know, comes back, you know, as the villain Alice. But it's not like she immediately goes, okay, I'm gonna go be Batwoman. Like, no, she tries to do the right thing and joins the military and tries to serve that way. And it's not until she's kicked out of the military and then, you know, she's kind of, her life spiraling out of control, and she just so happens to get jumped by muggers and Batman saves her. And that kind of gives her the impetus to go, like, that's what I want to do. Like, that's how I'm going to focus my skills and my desire to serve justice, is by being a vigilante like Batman. Like, and I thought that was kind of cool. Like, it kind of reminds me of what they're doing right now with Spider-Man and Tony Stark in the MCU, where he's kind of like, you know, I want to be a better hero because of this, like, kind of father-esque figure that's, you know, kind of chaperoning me along.
Yeah, and I think that too, like, not only just her arc, but her history with comics is fascinating of itself. So just some if you guys are subscribed to Geek Devotions, you guys know this already, but so like Batwoman just has one of the most interesting, I think, character arcs of why she was not only created, but where she's kind of been throughout the arc and of the span of history. So she was created by Edmund Hamilton and Sheldon Moldoff in July of 1956, and she made her debut in Detective Comics number 233. She was introduced as a love interest for Batman. And this was essentially only given to Batman to kind of take off some of the heat from the controversial book Seduction of the Innocent, which, if you guys don't know what that book is, essentially it alluded to, there was a psychologist that studied Batman and Robin's relationship and said, oh, well, these guys are very much homosexuals. Mm-hmm. This is a homosexual thing. And they were calling for comic books to be burned. And in 1964, a gentleman by the name of Julius Swartz, he took over as the editor on the Batman books, and pretty much he cleaned house. That if you were not a essential Batman character, you were done with. And it's even stated in the massive crossover event of Crisis on Infinite Earths that Batwoman just never existed, and that was canon and that was fact until 52, number 7, where Kate Kane makes a cameo. It's kind of like an introduction, and then in a couple issues later, she's introduced as Batwoman. So I think that it's really fascinating to kind of get to see this character's history in the comics, where she came from, why she was created, why she was eliminated, and then also been like, oh, no, that just, it never happened.
Yeah. It's kind of, you know, DC's good for just going like, oh, well, you know, we're either going to create some kind of event to, you know, wipe that from the slate, or we're just going to not acknowledge it and act like it didn't happen. Like, you know, either way, whatever's good, whatever works this time. But like you said, it's interesting to see how she's changed over time, you know, to go from just kind of being, you know, another Robin, but, you know, a love interest for Batman because of the whole controversy about them, you know, saying that, oh, you know, Batman and Robin have homosexual tendencies or whatever, or, you know, homosexual, you know, influences or whatever. And to her, actually them like transforming her into her own independent character, and is not a love interest to Batman at all, so much so to the point where, you know, she's not even interested in his sex. So I was like, that's really interesting how they changed that.
Yeah, and I love that sequence, because like when you first kind of read over when she's kind of first kind of taken over for this arc in Detective Comics, he, you know, he kind of makes this like joke like, I'll allow it or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of one of those humorous moments that you don't really expect from Batman. But as they kind of develop her in this solo sense of her as a character, it's really interesting to see really where they take her arc. I think is one of the most interesting, if not the interesting things about it, because it's like she doesn't have this affiliation with Batman, but yet she does. Mm-hmm. At the same time.
Well, they make sure to put him in the very first issue of the arc to make sure that, you know, like, hey, this is kind of like a passing of the torch type thing. Like, you know, like kind of to help it go down a bit better with people who may, you know, be like, oh, you know, this is Detective Comics, I wanted to see Batman, you know, so kind of, you know, help, you know, tide them over. It's like, hey, Batman is in it. You know, he's not the focus, and this is definitely going to be Kate's own, you know, independent story. But I like how they incorporated him, and then they bring him back in later towards the end as they're showing, you know, her origin and, you know, how she ends up, you know, becoming Batwoman.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to have an interlude into this commercial break, talk about something very specific and very special to this arc. But if you guys are listening to this right now and you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 123 suicides that take place each and every day. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That is one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, please reach out. You guys can reach out to us on any of our social media. Links are in the descriptions below. You guys can call the Suicide Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Also text anonymously to 741-741. Or you guys can also go to victimsandvillains.net/hope, where you can find even more resources past those. We want you guys to know that the reason we push publish the content that we do is so that you guys can know that there is hope and that you do have value and that you do have worth. And so we just encourage you guys to reach out. And with that, we'll be right back after these commercial breaks.
Hey, what's going on, you variety-loving people? I'm Brandon.
And I'm Jordan.
And we are the hosts of the Secret Spice of Life podcast.
Our podcast was created to spread positivity in your everyday lives while encouraging others to follow their dreams.
We cover a variety of topics such as business, health and fitness, music, and much, much more.
Make sure to check us out on iTunes, Google Play Music, Player FM, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and Podbean for all of our episodes.
Thanks, and have a positive and productive day.
All right, welcome back. And we talked a little bit of spoilers about this, but spoiler warning. So this episode, we are covering Batwoman's first arc in Detective Comics. It is spanning from 854 and it goes until about 863. It is 9 issues, and like I previously said, you guys can read this on the DC Universe app. And so I think that one thing that you had mentioned that you wanted to talk about specifically for this episode was the art of this book. And the art on this book is by J.H. Williams III. What was it specifically that you either liked or didn't like about the art?
I loved it, actually. I think that Williams has some really striking visuals and like the page composition that they have, like as far as like panel layouts and stuff. It was really, really creative. And I thought that it was a good color palette. Like the red was like this kind of really stark, you know, contrast against the black, and it really made it stand out. And I think his specific art style kind of reminded me of I don't know the word to describe him, but kind of like those like mural paintings that you would see in like a Catholic church or something like that, especially kind of towards the fight on the plane between Batwoman and Alice, and kind of like on that church and stuff. It or I guess it was a castle or something like that, like towards the beginning of the arc. But the art style reminds me of, I don't know, it felt very like Catholic for some reason. But I think maybe that's what he was going for, per se, because of the whole, you know, Church of Crime and all that stuff. I was like, well, maybe this is on purpose.
No, I totally get that. And I think that Williams is, I'm on the same page as you. I think that Williams is, he's a very much an underrated artist. I really kind of can't think of anything else that I've read that he's done. But reading this and revisiting this definitely makes me want to go back and kind of get more into his work, because he has this art about him that I felt like when you first read an issue, and by the time you get to the end of that issue, there's an evolution to the depth. Like, it just seems like his art, as the panels kind of go more forward, that they just kind of get more detailed and like more richer. Like, there's you know, a lot of the scenes with like Alice have like this like certain glow, because, you know, she's supposed to be this larger than life character that you know, is just very theatrical. And the art, when you're focusing on her, and definitely a lot with her interactions of the religion of crime or the Church of Crime, it definitely feels like it has this like haunting, glowing aspect to it. It's very it has a very theatricality element to it that I really enjoyed and really loved. And there are some arcs throughout here, even I think you kind of get it in the second arc, where you're giving her the origin story, where you basically have these like 2-page layouts, and they're her just like going from like rooftop to rooftop, or like moving, or like action. And there's like you were talking about, like the composition of the panels, like just the way that they're placed and painted, like it's gorgeous to see, and it really makes the entire page and these action scenes come alive and seem very blockbuster in their storytelling.
Yeah. Oh no, for sure. I also thought too, though, that And I mean, this has kind of always been like an issue in comics in general, but you know, where they kind of overly sexualize, you know, the characters. Like there are some panels and just like angles that, you know, Williams draws Alice and especially Batwoman, where he's just like, like, did you really have to go like from like the underneath angle? Like, all right. Cause there's a part specifically where Batwoman's trying to dive down to the plane that Alice has hijacked, and there's a shot where it's just like completely in between her legs, and it's just like, okay, like, I mean, like, I can appreciate like the kind of like abstract angles and views you're trying to capture, but at the same time I just felt like it was just trying to be like fan service for the sake of fan service, I guess.
Yeah, no, I definitely get that. I think that that's something that I have appreciated about this more modern era of comics, is that we're getting away from over sexualizing of these female characters, because like, if I'm going to read a female character, like Harley Quinn's my favorite book to read now, and I don't read it because she's painted as this, you know, this big tit bimbo. Sure. Like, she's, you know, she's proportionate, and her stories are just fantastic to read. Like, but I totally agree, and I feel like that was one of my biggest complaints about this art in here, is that, you know, while the storytelling is really great and the art it develops, like, there are some angles that Williams decides to use where it's kind of just like, all right, it's detailed. Little too detailed,
right.
Okay, I understand, like, I understand what you're saying. Like, you're talking about fan service for the sake of being fan service. There's one specific shot where I think it might even be the same shot you're talking about, where she's kind of like leaving a roof, and like the arc that she, like, the angle that it's like talking about, it's just like, I can see perfectly what no superhero should like.
Oh yeah.
You should not be able to see that specific angle in a comic book, where you're having, you know, I think her suit's like made of like leather, as the Colonel says, like later when he introduces it to her, like, leather should be thick enough to where you're not seeing.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
The genital area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. It was a lot of stuff like that, and I was just like, you know, like I get it, like, and even, you know, male characters are, you know, everything's like super skin tight and stuff like that, but it's I don't know, it felt a little exploitive. I mean, it nothing to deter from the book itself, you know, like, I would not tell somebody to not read this because of that, but it's definitely noticeable and it's there, but I don't think it hurts the storytelling or anything.
I'm just glad that he hasn't gotten his hands on a Dr. Manhattan story like that.
right. Yeah, well, I know he's done some work on like Batman Beyond and like The Sandman and stuff like that, which, you know, the little bit of stuff I saw from The Sandman that he had did looked really cool, and I'm like, I need to go back and read that.
Yeah, and like that's right. He did work on the Sandman Overture, and I've seen some bits and pieces of what he did for Sandman Overture, and was blown away. Like, he has a fantastic talent about him. It's just the angles I feel like that I kind of had a problem with. I'm just kind of like, no, maybe not.
All right, I was like, I don't know if I should feel dirty about this or not.
But with kind of like introducing Batgirl or Batwoman again, I was going to say Batgirl. Yeah. With introducing Batwoman again, they're reintroducing her into this new age where, you know, back when she was originally introduced, she was introduced as, like we previously said, as Batman's like love interest, to kind of, you know, tear away from, oh hey, Batman and Robin are shacking up at night. Right. What really goes on in the Batcave?
Right.
But you know, now she's, not only does she have basically nothing to do with Batman, but she's a lesbian.
Yeah.
And I think that that is one interesting aspect of the character that is really kind of, I think it's the more of the lighthearted humor in it, but it feels fitting with this day and age. Like, granted, like the arc we're talking about is 2010 or 2009, so it's like nine or it's like almost 10 years old. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think that it shows how far we've come as a society to where these things are now accepted.
Yeah, and I think that they were able to develop it well into her character, because initially it just felt kind of like, you know, for diversity's sake or like shock value, to go like, oh, you know, and she's a lesbian, you know. It was like, well, I mean, that's cool and all that, but it's like, what is that doing for her character? But I like how they worked it into her origin about that's why she was, you know, dishonorably discharged, you know, from the military, because she wouldn't deny that she was, you know, homosexual, and, you know, she got kicked out for it. Like, basically, you know, her commander had told her, like, hey, you know, as long as you just say these rumors aren't true, we'll let you stay. And she's like, you know, I can't lie. Like, you know, cadets, you know, job is to, you know, seek the truth and not lie and all this other stuff. And I thought that that was a good way to make that matter, because sometimes I feel like when they change the ethnicity or, you know, sexual orientation of a character is just cause, and it doesn't actually serve any kind of purpose. But with this, they worked it into where I was like, okay, like now I see why you did this. And this kind of gives her character a different outlook on the world and you know, being a vigilante and stuff like that, because she tried to do the right thing, but she was shunned away from it because she wouldn't lie and pretend to be something that she wasn't.
Yeah, and I think that that is kind of one of the, I think it's something that, you know, even now, my wife and I were talking a couple days ago about just kind of like how you look at the history of like coming out and how it's kind of, Freddie Mercury was what we were talking about, and you know, kind of him being a star in the 70s and the 80s, like, and even in the early 90s, like he was a very private person, but you know, no one ever knew if he was, you know, fully gay or if he was just bisexual. Like he was involved in both that we know of. And, you know, you look at kind of like how the LGBT was how they were, you know, accepted back in those days, where it was kind of like, it was there. But I think one thing that Bohemian Rhapsody did really well was that it was, the gay scene was there, but it was very down, like low, like it was very much on the down low, because like a lot of those people, a lot of, you know, homosexuals in that time, they weren't accepted. And I think that what they do here is really, I think that it's, they show the reality of, you know, the reality of how hard it is to come out and you know, be true to yourself. Because I think that, you know, what happens if I get rejected because of this? What happens if I, you know, kind of, you know, get discharged because of this? Mm-hmm. and all this other things. And I think that it handled it really well, and it spoke to even current generations that still struggle with, you know, wanting to come out. Russell Crowe and Nicole Kidman had that new movie coming out here soon that its name is escaping me, but it's about like the, you know, the just about like the challenges of being true to yourself and coming out. And I think that it was really handled really well, and it gives the LGBT community a character to relate to. I think that, you know, you look at our parents' generations growing up, and Spider-Man was their age at, you know, his genesis, and he was someone that he could relate to. And I think that for the LGBT, I think that Batwoman's a great example of her journey, not just as a hero, but as a personal character, and trying to have this journey of coming full circle of, you know, being true to herself and stuff along those lines. Like it gives them a hero to look up to, or to relate to, I guess, is, for lack of a better word, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. And it's, I find it just ironic too, is that, you know, they created this character to kind of squash the whole, you know, Batman and Robin being gay thing, but then fast forward to the future and they just made that character gay. I'm like, I find that funny.
I know, I totally agree. Like it's definitely like a deep sense of irony in every sense of the word.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, people, there was a thing for a while, just, you know, about people kind of going after comics, like, oh, you know, it was teaching your kids to be gay or making them violent, and, you know, that's where the whole Comics Code Authority came from and everything else. Like, it was a whole thing for a good couple decades there, where people just had a weird hard on about trying to get rid of comics.
Yeah, but I mean, like, too, like, I think a character like Batwoman, it definitely shows how far we've come as a society towards comics.
Oh yeah.
You know, we talked at the beginning of the episode about how, like, their comic culture is like it's rapid, but not everyone's necessarily into comic books.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, but you tell them about these characters, and I think that even putting a character like Batwoman onto a show like Arrow, that a lot of, you know, has a diehard following, and, you know, things like the CW period, I think it just has a diehard following, whether you're talking about Flash or Supergirl, or even to a lesser extent Legends of Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, it shows how far we've come, that we're taking on this gay superhero. Mm-hmm. Or LGBT superhero.
No, I agree. For a good while, I was on the CW hype train. Like, I watched like the first three seasons of The Flash. I watched like the first like four or five of Arrow. And now I've kind of, you know, they've run their course with me. I mean, they're still not bad shows. I mean, I jump in every now and then, but at this point, I'm just kind of like, meh. Like, it's, they've kind of done it all at this point now, because, especially with The Flash, for me, because when you lead with the Reverse Arrow, you know, storyline as your first season, it's kind of hard to, you know, do anything after that that's going to make me go like, oh man, I can't wait to see how, you know, like, I don't know how much of, like, The Flash you watch, but I think the last season I caught was the one with God of Speed or whatever.
Savitar. I'm still like super, super mad about how they handled that, because like the character in the comics, he is from the future, and he's like the leader of this cult, and he studies and prays to the God of Speed, and that's where he gets his name from, and that's how he gets his powers. And I mean, the cult, just, they are in and of themselves are just fascinating to kind of see how they go up against the Flash. And they totally soiled it with that season, because they're like, it's Emo Barry from the future. It's like,
yeah, with a scar. Like, oh, he's evil. Yeah, that's why I said, like, after they did the, you know, the Reverse Flash storyline, and then after they did the Flashpoint storyline, which they ruined the Flashpoint storyline. Like, they had it going pretty good for like the first few episodes, and then it just kind of, I don't know what happened after that. It lost sight of it. Like, they kind of was just going, well, we're still mad at you for screwing up the timeline, Barry, but now we got to go fight this shark. So, it was kind of like, I mean, in Arrow, Arrow, I gave up on that one about the season with the guy with the he basically had telekinesis powers.
Damian Dark.
Yeah, and I was like, yep, okay. Like, yeah. How they ended up doing Black Canary in that season, I was just like, okay. Like,
I will say this, like I love the Arrow and Flash, and but I agree with everyone's common complaints of the Arrow's third season being starting off really strong and then just completely going limp noodle by the end. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then season four, I felt like it started off like really strong for like two episodes, and then it it was like, all right, here we go. And like, it was like, oh, we broke legs, we took a step. And which is a shame, because like Neil McDermott or the however this guy's McDowell or however you say his last name, he's actually not that bad of an actor. Yeah, and I love watching him
like a villain in like everything you see him in, but he was actually really, I mean, he was the only good thing about that season though, because I could just tell he was just there to collect a paycheck, and he was just like, I'm just having a good time, man.
Yeah,
like, it's whatever.
I was so mad with the when they did with that, and I gave up really quickly on, like, I tried my best to stick it out and have high hopes for Flash's third season, because like the second season was really good. Mm-hmm. I thought the first season was kind of lackluster, but I thought they what they could have done with Reverse Flash, they picked it up in Zoom. Mm-hmm. And man, like the third season was so disappointing, but the seasons that followed those disappointments actually weren't bad seasons. Like season five was pretty good of Arrow, and season six was interesting to see where they took it. I still liked it though. Like it was different, and I think what I liked about it. But season four of The Flash, I think, was the best season that they had done. So I don't know how much that speaks to you, but it just same.
Sure. And that's why I think that, you know, trying to get it back to Batwoman, that's why I think that, you know, if Ruby Rose is received well by the fans, that, you know, I think that her spinoff show will do fine. You know, she can be dark and gritty like Arrow, or she can be, you know, kind of light and funny like, you know, Flash, or kind of something in between like Supergirl. So she has options. You know, my only thing, and I mean, it's no fault of the shows themselves, because they do it in the comics. Like I said, you know, Batwoman has her own Batcave, pretty much. She has her Alfred, pretty much. You know, she has her suit that looks like Batman's and all that. That's whatever. I'm kind of just sick of the format of the CW shows, because they're all like, you know, you have your main hero character, and then you have their support team, and they have their little base that they work out of. And then, you know, you get another character that has like a similar power to the main character that has their sidekick. And you start getting 9, 10 other supporting characters. And I'm just like, you know, I applaud the CW that they have been able to build a better DC universe than, you know, Warner Brothers has, like as a film company. But I don't know. Like, I feel like Arrow's kind of got lost in his own show, where it's just like, and we got the dude with the hockey mask and the dude with the T painted on his face. And it's like, okay, man, like, look, you know, and then, you know, Flash is the same issue. It's like, and now Iris is a speedster, and it's like, okay, guys, like, what are we doing? So that's what I'm worried about, is that they're going to do the Batwoman show. She's going to have her own Bat family built out, and we're just not going to see Batman. Like, they'll make references to him, maybe.
I hope not. And I'm going to kind of wind down before we move on. Like, I really hope not, that because that would be true to the character. Like, it wouldn't make sense to say, oh, right, you know, here we have Batwoman, and then we have, like, you know, essentially like Batwoman at the core, like it's Batwoman and the Colonel. Like, that's just the dynamic of what works. Mm-hmm. And like, when with Rebirth coming out, you know, yes, Batwoman has joined a Bat family, and it's been an interesting dynamic, because you have Batwoman, Then you have Batman, Robin, and Clayface. And I mean, that dynamic in and of itself, like, it's been interesting, but I don't think Batwoman as a character serves well as a leader. Like, I think she works good in her solo stuff, but not necessarily like leading a team. Like, I wouldn't want to see I couldn't say that, because like, I could say that in theory and then be proven completely wrong, to see Batwoman in this kind of, what would like the word be, kind of like an outsiders group, kind of like what Batman had going on with the 80s, and then Nightwing took it over. Like, I think it would, if she was ever going to leave like a quote unquote Bat family, that would be the one to kind of do it, and it might be interesting. So I don't know, in theory, I don't think that she really works with characters, and just because of how they've written her into the backstory, especially with these two arcs right here, you know, she's kind of gone through this traumatic experience, and like, that's what she works really well. Like, unless they like somehow could like put into, like, I think the question, because of, you know, Renee Montoya and her past, like, that might be the only team up that I could see these guys kind of doing.
Sure. Which that would be cool, kind of like how they did with this, you know, with her origin arc in this, you know, they kind of had the epilogue story with, you know, the question and stuff. Like, that would be a good way, because the question's never going to be a character that's going to be like, you know, get its own show or movie or something like that. So a Batwoman show would be a good way to integrate, you know, Renee Montoya into this whole Arrowverse that they've built out. And, you know, hey, who knows, maybe she too can be on Legends of Tomorrow.
Maybe. All right, so we're moving on to Roads to Hope, and this is the point in our show where we engage with our guests of the week about a theme of either hope or mental health in the source material of the episode, and this one is coming from her discharge issue, which I believe is Detective Comics number 861, and this one is, 862, my bad. So this issue essentially is... one thing I think is really strong about this issue is there's a scene where Batwoman, Kate, is standing in front of her, you know, author, and she's basically being discharged from the army because of being a lesbian, and that's frowned upon in the army. And I think it's, you know, she's like, he's like, basically like, just tell me what I want to hear and we'll put this whole mess behind us. And she's like, I can't, I have to be true to myself. And I think that being true to yourself and being honest with yourself and with those around you, whether you're happy or depressed, whether you're full of joy or contemplating suicide, I think that it's really important to be true and be honest with those around you, not to projectify this image of lies and deception, because I'm speaking from someone that thought about suicide for months and months and months and personified joy and happiness and hyperness, like everything was all right. It really does make a difference when you can have someone in your life that you can just confide into. And that's, community is so important when it comes to these kind of things.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. It's one of those things where, even in the story, when Kate does get discharged and she kind of starts to, you know, go on benders and spiral, that, you know, she has people in her life, like, you know, her father or Renee, who keep trying to instill hope in her and, you know, make her see, like, yes, you can still be, or still have the same values that you had before and still be, you know, some semblance of, you know, what you were trying to go after in the first place by joining the military. Because she feels wronged from what happened to her, and she's looking for a way to try and you know, fix that by trying to help others. And she kind of loses faith and, you know, loses sight of her goals and loses her way. But she has that support system around her to, you know, help find, you know, her center again.
No, I couldn't agree more. And like, I love the way that you put that, kind of like talking about this center, like what makes you as a person tick. And I think that, you know, there's being true to yourself and not just, you know, past that, but if you are depressed, it's always amazing to put your time and energy into something like we've talked about in the past before, like just finding what brings you joy, what brings you hope. But there's also that importance of needing somebody that is going to, like Mike was just talking about, keeping you true to who you are and not changing who you are, and those friends that are going to call you out when you're being crazy and not like yourself. And I think that those are the friends that you need to keep for yourselves. And I was just talking to Brandon from the PS Midnight Cast, and he's a guy that is constantly on our channel with wrestling stuff. And he's just such a vital part. He's grown to such a vital part here, Victims and Villains, but it, just having him to confide in and talk with and be real with, and calling him out on stuff when he's acting out of character, and also vice versa. Like those kind of things, like they really impact me as an individual, and they impact him as an individual. And I think that when you can be real with someone and be true to yourself and constantly be true to yourself, and just be open about what you're feeling and how you think and stuff like that, like it really starts taking away the power from a depression and that secret pain.
Definitely.
All right, so if you guys are excited for Ruby Rose to take over for the Batwoman role here in just a couple of days with the Elseworlds crossover, make sure that you guys let us know why you guys are excited or why you're not. But where can people find One Giant Leap for Geeks?
You guys can find a podcast on pretty much any platform or app that you use to get podcasts, iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, just wherever.
All right. Well, make sure that you guys click the links in the descriptions below. And until next time, all right, let's try this again. 5, 4, 3. All right, we'll make sure that you guys click the links in the descriptions below and go check out their show. You never know what you're going to get over there, as we learned in the beginning of the episode. I have not gotten any of the weird stuff in your shows that I will probably forget, but hopefully forget. but this is now immortalized in our universe forever, so thanks. But you guys can find us everywhere on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And if you guys like what we stand for and you guys want to help us get mental health resources into schools and conventions, consider supporting us monthly on Patreon to help us achieve that goal, or pick up some Victims and Villains swag over on our Etsy page. And until next time, remember to keep talking nerd, talking hope, and speaking nothing else.